Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Frogs of War radio show. I am Jamie. She is Melissa. It is Sunday night. We are all feeling good after an SMU defeat at the hands of TCU, 33-3 was the final score there. TCU just whooping the tar out of SMU, which always makes Frog fans feel good. With that, we will turn it over to one of the biggest Frog fans, Melissa. How are you doing?
I am doing just fabulous, Jamie. How are you this evening?
I am great. I've got a shiner here. I've got an iPad with the Cowboys game streaming. We're talking about TCU. And, you know, we're going to get on Twitter later and make fools of ourselves. So it's going to be a good night.
You know, I spent most of the afternoon on Twitter. I don't think I made too much of a fool of myself, but I'll let the people be the judge of that. I got a little salty when the Art Briles to LSU rumor started up and all the Briles defenders came out of their mom's basement to start tweeting at me about, you know, how I was buying into the media injustice that made him a scapegoat for what was happening. So yeah, it was a good afternoon. I enjoyed it. It was good.
Because that's the injustice, right?
Yeah.
That's the injustice.
Yep, that's the injustice.
I did like your tweet. I just retweeted it from the Frogs of War account of the Reunion Tower in downtown Dallas flashing the TCU on Sunday Night Football.
Yeah. Sorry for the really bad lights there and the reflection, but with the show was counting down from the 5-second mark, and I didn't have time to go over and turn them off without having to, you know, take the earphones out. So I made a concerted decision there, and I think I chose wisely.
I feel like you just wanted to show the world that your house is in fact lit, like it's lit.
It's always. Wow, we're old. Oh man, this is rough.
Good. Well, we had a good run.
Yeah, well,
so,
you know.
Where do you want to start? Do we want to start with SMU? Do we want to start with Gary Patterson to LSU rumors? Do we want to start with the latest decommit? Where do you want to start tonight?
You know what? Let's start with the past here. Let's start with Friday night. What happened to SMU? I mean, I'm sure we both have some thoughts on that. I do want to, you know, speaking of that SMU game, I want to give a shout out to the friends I made in the. Well, I missed all of halftime and half of the third quarter waiting in the concession line. I won't, you know, sell myself out for which one, but I did make some nice little TCU friends while I was there for what felt like 3 hours. So they said they listened to the show. So if you guys are listening tonight, what's up?
What's up?
You're doing well. Yeah. So it's always nice to know that there are people actually listening to our show. You know, Friday night, I felt like it was one of those things where once again, we cannot get rolling in the first half. I don't understand that. I don't know what we can do differently to get that taken care of. It was a very frustrating half of football. But as we've seen the last couple of weeks, you know, in the second half, the Frogs look really, really good on both sides of the ball. And the defense after that opening drive did a really nice job of kind of the bend, not break philosophy. Finally got a couple of interceptions, which we've been waiting for all season. And made some really big plays. Tony James, I thought, did great for his first time lining up at corner this season. He looked really solid out there and kind of helped make up for the loss of Jeff Gladney. So maybe we found something positive there to build off of. But it gave me a little bit of confidence the way we finished heading into this weekend against Oklahoma.
Yeah, definitely. You know, they had almost 400 yards of offense in the second half. And it's always good to see that kind of thing happen. But, Melissa, I don't know if they can keep doing this bit that they've done all three, or I guess almost all four games that they've started this season, you know, just in the first half. It's been abysmal. You know, you can say that, you know, the defense against Arkansas and against South Dakota State in the first half were pretty terrible. Gave up, you know, a couple unnecessary scores against Iowa State in the first half. SMU took the first possession of the game and marched straight down the field. And, you know, fortunately that possession ended in a field goal, but there's a pattern developing that's really concerning. And it doesn't feel like TCU comes fully mentally ready to step on the field and immediately start executing their game plan. It's like it takes them a while to get into it. And if that's the case going into games against like Arkansas, Oklahoma,
we're good with them.
That's already happened, and we're not going back there again. But games like Oklahoma, Baylor, Oklahoma State, West Virginia, Texas Tech, you can't just let those teams come out and hit you in the mouth first. You've got to be the aggressor. You've got to be the one that gets off to a hot start, or you're going to find yourself down, and probably down in a way that's not going to make it easy to come back. So I do like that they look good in the second half. They're making great adjustments. Kenny Hill looked phenomenal in the second half of this game against SMU. But you're right. They can't keep getting off the slow starts.
Well, I mean, you know, we've tried to touch on it, and I don't know that any of us are going to know the answer, but what is it about this team particularly that you think is going on that's causing them to start so slow? Or is it even something that is consistent that can be changed?
Just the sense that I'm getting, you know, from the things that Patterson is saying in post game, and just from the way that they look when they're playing in the first half, is that it's an energy thing. It's an, are you stepping onto this football field ready to be victorious, ready to come out and do your job? And it looks like, you know, they come out and they're really just trying to feel things out every time they're stepping onto the field, and they're really trying to, you know, see if the opposing team is going to execute the way that they expect them to, or if they're going to throw something new at them. It seems to me like they're just hesitant and that the energy is low. And if that's the case moving into Big 12 play, it's just not going to fly. And I don't know how you fix that other than to have guys like Kyle Hicks and Kenny Hill step up and say, we have to come out hot. I mean, Kenny Hill said that after the SMU game on Sunday. He goes, you know, it's on me and it's on some of these guys to really step up and make sure that we get off to the fast starts like we need to, and we got to get that together in practice. And so, like, at least he's starting to acknowledge that. A couple weeks ago, he was saying, you know, I don't think that Patterson is seeing the energy that we actually have and blah, blah, blah. But now he's starting to take on this role that I think everyone hopes that he will in that vocal leader in the locker room kind of position.
Well, and it's very concerning heading into a game like OU, because while, you know, in the very, very rare occasion that this might be the first time, I don't even know in how long, that we've gone into a game where TCU is ranked and Oklahoma is not. But if you can't get up to play Oklahoma, who is the Big 12, prohibitive Big 12 title favorite, who came into the season as number 3 team in the country, if you can't get fired up to play in this game, then I think it's time for us to start to say, you know, to start to think maybe we can't get fired up for anything. This is obviously, you know, it's the biggest game on the schedule to this point. Whether or not it becomes the biggest game of the season remains to be seen. But it's, you know, like you said, and I think we all know, it's absolutely imperative that the Frogs don't dig themselves in a double-digit hole going into the second half, because as bad as Oklahoma has looked against Houston and Ohio State, that's Houston and Ohio State. And I mean, I think they've shown that they're going to be good programs that are going to be right in it until the end. And TCU doesn't have, you know, hasn't shown consistently that they have that kind of talent to make up for that against an Oklahoma team that, while they've struggled, is still incredibly dangerous. And Baker Mayfield, as much as we all love to talk about Baker Mayfield, still can make a lot of plays. And that could spell disaster for TCU that has a really good shot, you know, to compete for a Big 12 championship this year.
Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely with you. There's too much talent on this team to say that they can't compete for a title. It's just a matter of putting all of these pieces together. But speaking of some of these pieces, one person that stood out to me, and I think stood out to all of TCU Nation and some national media as well, is John D'Arce. Or as the press box announcer at SMU liked to say, John D'Arce. This is brutal.
Well, you know what? I would take two of them. If John D'Arce and John D'Arce both play like that, they can both play.
Yeah. Yeah, bring it. Because, you know, I believe I saw a tweet today that says he has 275 yards receiving on the season so far, which is true. He does on 16 receptions, I believe. 275 receiving yards, 290 receiving yards on 16 receptions and a touchdown. All of LSU's receivers this year have combined for 256 yards receiving. So I think that John made the right choice transferring to TCU.
I believe so. Well, I mean, I think it's easy to look at what happened today and think, well, Les Miles got fired because he lost to Auburn. But in reality, I think what happened is Les Miles got fired because he let John D'Arce go. I mean, he has almost as many catches through the first three games of the season, four games of the season this year, as he did in the entirety of last year. So this is obviously a kid who's a weapon in the passing game. He is an incredible downfield blocker. We haven't seen that really since South Dakota State, because that's just not the direction the TCU offense has been going. But he gets a hold of somebody. He opens up holes in the running game. He's a physical specimen. And for a kid to take a hit like he took in the end zone and to bounce back up and open up the second half with a 70-something yard reception and just kind of show his toughness, that was pretty special. If you're going to wear – I've seen a lot of this on Twitter. If you're going to wear the number 9, you better do it proud. And I feel like this kid, both on and off the field, is absolutely living up to the 9 before him, which was, of course, Josh Dotson.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He's living into that number, which is a hard, hard thing to do. It's a tall order to ask of someone who is new in this offense, but he's doing it well through four games. He's doing it very well. He did mention in his, you know, I had an opportunity to chat with some of these kids after the game with the rest of the media. And he said that when he took that hit, someone asked him, you know, what goes through your mind when you take a hit like that? And for those of you that might've missed it in the second quarter of the game against SMU, on the play where Kenny Hill actually threw his one interception of the game, Diarce was running his route into the end zone. It took him into the end zone, and I believe it was a safety, Darian Millenian, something, number 29 for SMU.
Yeah, that dude.
Laid him out. Absolutely was targeting. He was ejected. It was the right call. But someone asked Diarce after the game, hey, what goes through your mind when you take a hit like that? And DR just kind of laughed, and he said, you know, I was just trying to convince myself that I needed to keep breathing. And he's like, in a situation like that, you just got to keep breathing, let the doctors get to you, and figure out if there's something actually wrong. Or if he goes, because he said he had his breath knocked out of him, but he got cleared to come right back in and felt great and obviously made a major impact in the second half right off the bat with that 75-yard touchdown pass, and then just kind of lit the world on fire.
So, well, and I think, great. You know, one of the, yeah, sorry, I was going to say, I think one of the things that we saw too is when you see a kid take a hit like that, bows up, keep playing after, of course, making sure he's fine and cleared by the doctors. You know, I think the team, which has been, as we've documented, looking for leadership, might turn to a guy like that, even though he's here in his first year, he's a transfer, and may say, hey, you know, maybe this is a kid that we can look to kind of lead us, because it does feel a lot like he has stepped into that vocal leader role, you know, over the last game and a half, really, where we saw him just light up Iowa State and then, of course, just look absolutely dominant in the second half against SMU.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not the leading receiver on this team as far as receptions go. He is leading in yards with 290. He's averaging 18 yards a catch, which is pretty ridiculous. That's, you know, a 75-yard touchdown catch will help that statistic a lot.
Yeah.
But you take that away and it's still like around 13 or 14, and that's a really good average there for a receiver, especially of his size. Patterson made a comment about that too after the game. He said, you know, he's a big body, he's just a broad body, and that he's able to kind of settle into those spots in the zone and really kind of turn and box out smaller secondary players, which is something that we saw Dotson do a lot. Now Dotson isn't as broad as Diarce is, but he's still that big frame kind of guy where he just takes up space, and if he positions his body correctly, he's got a major advantage. And we're starting to see Diarce do that over and over again.
Well, and he runs good routes. Like you said, he has a knack for finding the soft spot in the zone. He keeps working down the field. You know, a couple of those catches, you know, Hill was kind of scrambling around in the backfield and, you know, kind of waiting for somebody to break open under pressure. And, you know, he just kind of – he has a feel for not giving up on the play. And you see that from guys that are good down the field blockers too. And he reminds me a little bit of maybe a little bit bigger, you know, more athletically gifted Tyus Lanina, that he can kind of work inside and out. He's not above blocking. He's not above playing on special teams. He just wants the team to win, and it helps too. I'm sure that he's gotten quite a few balls thrown his way. And I mean, I can only think of, you know, one or two drops that he's really had. Otherwise, he's been kind of nails, and someone that Kenny Hill obviously feels super, super comfortable getting the ball to and trust on in big situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, that you bring up a good point there, because there were a lot of dropped passes, especially in the first half against SMU. And it seems to me like there is not – and I tweeted this out from the Frogs War account when it was happening, because after Hill threw his interception – there was a lot of flack about how, man, he sucks and blah, 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 and he's not making good reads, and we just need to try Foster Sawyer and blah, blah, blah. But I didn't see any of these people getting on the receivers when they were dropping first down passes, when they were dropping touchdown passes, when they were really letting Kenny Hill down. At one point, Hill was 6 of 11 from the field for like 62 yards. And it was like almost near the end of the first quarter, maybe barely into the second quarter. 5 incompletions were dropped passes. Well, 4 were dropped passes, and then 1 was the pick. And so you're talking about criticizing a kid when 4 of those passes could have turned into 45 or 50 extra yards, maybe a touchdown. And then we're talking about how Kenny Hill is 10 for 10 with 120 yards passing and a touchdown in the first half. And we're like, this guy is finally figuring it out. He is a dominant quarterback, and he's going to be this guy that's leading us to the promised land or whatever. But instead, you have 4 drop passes, and Hill throws a pick, and then the narrative is just, you know, the narrative lives, I guess, that Kenny Hill is inadequate, which is ridiculous.
Well, it's frustrating. You're not going to find a bigger fan of Foster Sawyer, the person, than me. He's an amazing kid. He's a kid that I've seen play since he was in high school at All Saints. You know, he woke up on my school more than one occasion. Great person, wonderful person. You know, God forbid that Kenny Hill gets hurt. I have a lot of confidence in him. But there's nothing that Kenny Hill has done or that I've seen from Foster Sawyer that makes me go, 3-1, yeah, we should probably make a switch here. I think we got to shake things up. Foster can play. Foster has a ton of talent. There's no doubt. But in this offense, in this system, with the issues the offensive line has had, with the inability to, you know, consistently generate a running game, mostly because of the play calling, Kyle Hicks has been fabulous. But I think you need a guy that's more of a threat with his legs. And Kenny Hill has shown that he can spark the team with his arm. He can spark the team with his legs. And while he hasn't been perfect, I think we saw today that he's the only player in the country who's in the top 10 in passing yards, rushing touchdowns. So yeah. What do you want? I mean, unless Foster Sawyer is going to come in and have a completion percentage over 90 and not throw any interceptions and never fumble the ball, how can you possibly think that Kenny Hill has done anything to get benched? He has been, he had the one, obviously, the mistake at Arkansas, whether it was a mistake, whether it was misinterpreted, you know, we've beaten that horse to death. But, he's been a great citizen. He's done everything right. You know, he's going to class. He's doing the right things. He's not getting in trouble. We haven't heard anything about him other than what's happening on the field. And isn't that what you want from your quarterback? So I think we've got to just get off this kid's back, let him play ball, understand he's not Trayvon Boykin. He's not going to be Trayvon Boykin. But at the end of the day, he made some really dumb mistakes as a young player at A&M. He learned from those. He worked his way back into this position, and he has 100% earned it. So let's give him a season to figure things out and to get the rust off, to get back on track, and let's, you know, just support the kid. Because at the end of the day, I truly believe we're going to go as far as Kenny Hill takes us. So if we want to be the ball and chain holding them back as fans, that's on you guys. You make that call. But I'm just going to trust in this kid until I truly feel he's not doing his job on the field or off the field. But at this point, it's really hard to argue that that's the case.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And just so you know, he's 4th right now in the country as far as passing yards are concerned with 1,487. He's only behind Davis Webb, Pat Mahomes, and Drew Lock from Missouri. So you know, from that stat, I mean, you can't really complain
too much.
Davis
Webb, Pat Mahomes, and Drew Lock.
And
what a list.
Yep.
What a list.
Yeah. I mean, we can go on about that list if we really want to. But yeah, and then he's tied for 8th in the country with rushing touchdowns with 6. So 4th in the country in passing yards, 8th in the country in rushing touchdowns. And I believe, let's check this. I just want to confirm your other stat. He is, where'd you go? 21st in the country in completion percentage at 66.1%.
Yeah, and I know he's in the top 10 for rushing yards for quarterbacks. I don't know if he is in rushing yards overall. I saw that pop up on Twitter, and I probably should have paid more attention to it. But we're not here to be actually accurate.
We're here to be biased and stuff.
Yeah.
But I can filter that out and figure it out in a second. But yeah, no, but statistically, and I got hammered a little bit for this the other day, saying, you know, you're relying too much on the stats and not actually watching the games. And, you know, I've watched every single second of every single game this year.
Yeah.
He's not perfect, but if you compare what we're seeing on the field, if you're removing your hate for him for just a half second, plus looking at his statistics, once you get home and get back to wherever it is that you live, you open up your computer, ESPN.com. He's statistically one of the best quarterbacks in the country this year. TCU's offense is third for total offense in the country this year. The offense has not been the problem this year. It's been the defense. It was the defense against Arkansas. You can't tell me that even though he got called for that penalty and it put Arkansas in a favorable position, that TCU's defense had any reason to let Arkansas march down the field like that and score a touchdown and get the two-point conversion. You can't tell me that the TCU defense should have allowed 24 first-half points to South Dakota State. You can't tell me that TCU's defense should have given up 82 plays to Iowa State's offense or whatever it was. And so through the first three games of the season, it was TCU's defense that was really kind of holding this team back. Yes, the offense was inconsistent, but when they were on better than anyone else in the country. So now one of the things that we can, you know, going back to the SMU game, one of the things that we can really kind of focus in on now is that the defense looked good. After that first SMU drive where they kicked the field goal, the defense ratcheted up the pressure and they locked it down. And that is something that is really positive, I think, Melissa, moving into the Big 12 kind of slate that we have in October, is they got good pressure. The cornerback play looked better. The linebacker play looked decent. Ty Summers had some really good tackles in open space to keep SMU from getting first down. He was a beast. Patterson did not give him a lot of credit. I asked about Summers' play in the post-game press conference after SMU, and he said, you know, they're picking on him. They're testing him because they know that he's a weak link in the defense. He didn't say it quite like that. He didn't call him a weak link, but he said, you know, they're picking on him right now. He made some good plays, but he's still not where we want him to be. So that's good because, you know, Patterson's probably saying that a little bit to push him, but he's being tested by defenses. And, you know, from my eyes against SMU, he stepped up and played really well. So you're talking now about a defense that has improved week to week. And I know that SMU isn't great. They were missing Matt Davis, but they still had Cortland Sutton. They still had James Proche. They had some good weapons on that offense that could have given TCU some trouble and did give TCU a little bit of trouble. But overall, it was a great defensive effort for all four quarters, and it's really good to see going into conference play.
Well, and the thing to me that is the most exciting about the last couple weeks is that, you know, we faced two of the better wide receivers in the country in Cortland Sutton and Alan Lazard, and Lazard did absolutely nothing against TCU. I think he had one catch and it was late in the game. Cortland Sutton had an incredible game. If you look at the stat sheet, you know, it was 5 receptions and 113 yards, but that has to be the quietest 113 yard game I've ever seen a major talent like Cortland Sutton have. He was dangerous. He made plays. But again, it's that bend, don't break philosophy, and that's kind of been the hallmark of the TCU teams that Gary Patterson has coached. What the difference has been is that normally it's kind of, we're going to give up chunks of yards, you're going to make plays, but then we're going to force you into something stupid, or we're going to get a big sack, or we're going to, you know, get you in a first and 20 or a second and 20 situation by forcing a penalty with the pass rush. And that we just haven't seen yet from this team until late in that game against SMU, where, you know, TCU did end up with, I believe it was 4 sacks, might have been 5 sacks. They had the 2 interceptions. Matt Davis missing certainly made an impact on this game, but this SMU offense is not bad by any stretch. They have 2 really, really talented running backs. Braden West, who has been just a star, was held to 43 yards. I mean, for a guy that speedy, didn't have anything over 8 on a given handoff. Like, that's a great sign for TCU. And I love the fact that Gary Patterson called out Ty Summers, because, you know, Summers and Douglas have just been by far the leading tacklers on this team. And heading into Oklahoma, knowing what happened last year, knowing the flack that Summers took after that game for the hit on Baker Mayfield, I'm sure that there's a little bit pushing and a little bit prodding and a little bit of needling that Patterson wants to do just to make sure Summers is focused and locked in and doesn't get distracted, because he's about to see that loot for, you know, all over social media, all over TV. It's all they're going to be talking about leading up into that game. And so I think getting him locked in and focused on the game plan is the best thing that Patterson can be doing right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Ty Summers led TCU with 13 total tackles against SMU. Second was Travin Howard with 10. And third was Nico Small, who's been really good at safety the last couple of weeks. He got a little dinged up against SMU, had TCU fans freaking out, but he came back in, played incredibly well, and he had one of TCU's two, count them, Melissa, two interceptions, something we haven't seen in a long time.
I had somebody in the stands explain to me what just happened, because it had been so long since I'd seen one, I didn't know.
It was TCU's first interception, I believe, since the fourth quarter of their game against Baylor last November.
Yeah, this is true. This is a true statement.
Yeah. So,
it's been a long time.
And they broke the seal, and now hopefully the floodgates have just opened wide, because Nick Orr finally held on to one. You know, he had an opportunity to pick a ball against Arkansas. He dropped another interception earlier in the game against SMU. Finally got one on a ball that was thrown pretty much directly at him.
Yeah, yeah.
But nonetheless, he held on to it. There's confidence there, I think, in this defense now because of the way they play. They had eight tackles for loss total, two interceptions, four pass breakups. They were rushing Ben Hicks all night. He could never get comfortable. Yeah, I think that this defense had a phenomenal game. I do.
Well, and you know, Baker Mayfield is a whole different beast, and I know we'll get to Oklahoma here, you know, on Thursday night. But before we leave the SMU conversation, you know, you talked about breakout players. I think there's two guys that are worth mentioning here. Number one, we saw for the first time make some plays, and that is true freshman wide receiver Dylan Thomas, which he was one of my favorite signees of the class of 2016. He's a kid that I think is going to end up being a super explosive talent. He played at Pascal High School. Grew up, you know, which for those of you that don't know, is literally right down the street from TCU. Their colors are also purple and white. You see those Pascal kids. If you ever drop down at or drive down Berry Street, you know, around 12:30, there's Pascal kids everywhere because they have off-campus lunch. There's a real relationship between the two schools, obviously. And Dylan was a quarterback at Pascal, very, very good one. A little bit undersized to play that at the next level, but just an explosive athlete. Blew his knee out. Came back to play at the end of his senior season for basketball. So he blew his knee out during football season and was playing basketball. If that tells you anything about the work ethic of this kid, the drive of this kid, if you've had an ACL injury, coming back to play hoops, you know, within a 6-month period is unbelievably impressive. So I was pumped to see him. Great leader. Just so highly spoken of by his teachers and his coaches at Pascal and his teammates. So he got on the field. He made a couple really nice catches. Ended up with two on the evening for 21 yards. And I'm pretty sure one of those was a big third down conversion. And so it was great to see him, you know, especially with Isaiah Graham being a little bit banged up, the injuries that TCU's had in that position. He looks like a guy that can be a contributor. And with our lovely Emmanuel Porter, who is such an incredible talent, but has just had a little bit of trouble with drops lately. It was good to see, another guy get in there and kind of show something to hopefully get Porter to get focused in and make those catches. The other guy that we have to talk about who came in the impossible position of being asked to replace Kevontae Turpin is Desmond White. And I think White is kind of been a forgotten guy. He didn't look great in the first few games. He looked too small to make an impact. He just wasn't showing us much. And he came in and was just unbelievable for TCU Friday night. What he did in the return game and also in the receiving game was just such a spark plug. He had six catches, 49 yards. But as a kick returner, as a punt returner, he had 74 yards on three touches, including along the 31. So, Turpin is such a special talent and such an electric player and such a complete total momentum changer to see Desmond White come out there and show, hey guys, I got this. Don't even worry. I mean, that's kind of what I felt like. That was really great to see. I mean, he's got the quicks and the cutting ability. He's not quite Turpin, but I don't know that he's as far behind as we were afraid. And it looks like he could be that spark plug heading into Oklahoma.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I said this last week, I think when we were lamenting Turpin's loss a little bit and talking about who was going to fill in with him, we were saying the same thing when Cameron Echols Looper transferred. Who possibly is going to step in into the punt and kick return game and have an impact like he did? And then we had Kevontae Turpin. You know, and now that Turpin is down, we have Desmond White, who at least for this first game went from big question mark in the punt return game to SMU is punting away from him.
Yeah.
You know, so in the span of three punt returns, he kind of quelled all of those fears that TCU fans had by looking like he was solid. And, you know, I don't remember a time where Gary Patterson came onto the field and hugged Kevontae Turpin after a punt return. So Desmond White is up 1-0 in that regard.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. I mean, he's definitely not Kevontae Turpin because nobody is Kevontae Turpin. Sure. But if he can just be the Desmond White that he was against SMU, that's going to be plenty effective for this special teams unit.
100%. I mean, he's another kid that's just easy to root for. He's always smiling, and he's kind of got that juice and that energy that Terp does too. And obviously, we'd love to see Terp come back this season and be healthy and, you know, hope that the worst rumors on the internet aren't true. But if it's not the case, I think it's good and good for him too, because he was at the game Friday night. He was sitting on the training table. He's in a full leg brace on crutches, but he was moving and he was mobile. And you could see him interacting with Dez a little bit on the sideline too. And I think for Turpin to know, hey, they got this, they're going to be okay, that's got to make him feel a little bit better too about his situation. Because one of the things that we hear these guys that get hurt talk about all the time is, you know, just that trying to get over that feeling of feeling like you let your team down or that, you know, they're hurting because of you. And to have the knowing that there's a guy out there who's going to pick up when you can't be out there has got to help Turpin feel a little bit better about his situation as well.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. You know, we would be remiss, though, if we if we talked about this SMU game and we didn't talk about the guy who is, in my opinion, the number one positive impact on this TCU offense through four games, and that's Kyle Hicks. He didn't have a touchdown against SMU. I believe it was his first game without a touchdown this season. But he had 5 catches for 53 yards receiving on 6 targets. For 10.6 yards per catch average. He had 14 carries for 89 yards. And by my math, that's 143 total yards divided by 19, at 7.5 yards a touch. And when you have a player like that coming out of the backfield who is also capable of picking up blocks to protect his quarterback, which Hicks did again on Sunday night or Saturday, Friday night, we're just working backwards. On Friday night, you're talking about a real legitimate three down back. And Kyle Hicks, in my opinion, has done that because not only is he leading this team in carries, rushing yards, and he's second in rushing touchdowns with 5 to Kenny Hill, but he's also leading this team in catches. He's got 20 receptions already this year and 221 receiving yards. He's got, you talk about the order of TCU receivers by catch, by reception. Kyle Hicks with 20, Taj Williams with 19, John D'Arcy Turpin with 16, Desmond White with 13, and then you've got Slanina with 9, Porter with 7, Jalen Austin with 5, and then you've got everyone else. Like, Kyle Hicks has 72 touches for 535 yards already this year and 6 touchdowns through 4 games. He's on pace for a 2,000-yard year. That's insane. It's absolutely insane. And to have a kid like this who's finally healthy, who we were hoping would be this, he's blown all of these expectations out of the water. Patterson raved about him again after the SMU game, saying that he's everything you want in a leader. And now, hopefully, the rest of these guys are going to start to follow his lead.
Well, one of the things, too, that I heard was said on the broadcast, because, you know, the venerable Mac Brown was one of the announcers for this game, is that he mentioned that Kyle Hicks was a UT commit and that he flipped. And he said, man, sure would have liked to have had him. I think we missed on that one. So I think that's pretty much the ultimate compliment. And, you know, one other thing, too, on that is Kyle Hicks has been so good and so unbelievable that, you know, he's helped TCU kind of pull away the last two games. And so we've seen a lot of Trevorce Johnson. And Trevorce Johnson had another great quarter in the fourth in that kind of that cleanup time. And, you know, he went 4 for 36 with a touchdown. And so maybe we start to see what I would love to see, and that's a double backfield there with getting both TJ and Kyle Hicks on the field, letting Hicks kind of split out, you know, from the backfield a little bit. I think it just opens up the offense quite a bit when you have two guys you can put on the field that you trust, that can both catch the ball, can both, pick up the blitz. Hopefully it looks like TJ's been a little bit stronger in that area this year, and that both of them are dangerous to break out for big games. So that just makes TCU's offense more dangerous, which is what we needed to see. I think we saw a couple more wrinkles You know, maybe one of them was awfully misguided because this was the game of the double reverse that was a near disaster there. But, you know, we're starting to see that offense open up under Kenny Hill and with Cumbie and Meacham calling the plays. They're starting to identify the guys that they can trust down the field, and Kenny Hill's building that rapport. So heading into a big week, it's good to see, you know, a little bit of confidence out of the offensive players, to see guys like Travorce Johnson picking up. You know, Taj Williams had another great game too. We haven't even talked about him, but he had almost 100 yards receiving on 5 catches. So I think we're starting to see some real positive things out of this offense at the right time. They're getting better. They're getting more consistent. We could see them show up to the stadium in the first half. You know, I see this a lot on Twitter, but everybody keeps saying, man, if this team played 4 quarters, they would be really, really tough to beat, and I think that's absolutely the case. Now we just got to figure out how to get them to start when the first horn goes off.
Yeah, they would be undefeated, without a doubt, if they had put a complete game together every Saturday this week this season.
It'd be a top 10 team.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And we would be talking Heisman about Hill and Hicks. We wouldn't be talking about benching Hicks at this point.
Right.
You know, one thing that I did want to touch on that you mentioned that I really did like about Taj Williams was that he had a big drop on like a 2nd and 12 or something like that. And he got really frustrated with himself. And then he came back and his next reception was a 3rd down conversion. And he fought for a couple yards to get to the line. And he came up and he was bouncing and he had energy. And I really liked that from a kid who had a great first game against South Dakota State and then kind of, you know, faded into the background a little bit against Arkansas and Iowa State. To see him come back and have a really good game against SMU was very heartening for me, because in the end, John D'Arce can't do it all. Kyle Hicks can't do it all. But if you have a third weapon like Desmond White, then you're really starting to form kind of what we saw in 2014 and 2015, where you had a quarterback who was capable of getting the ball out of his hands quickly and moving on the ground. You had a running back who was dominant on the ground and was able to catch passes out of the backfield. And you had 2 wide receivers who were just reliable as all get out. And if you get back to that formula, we saw success for 2 years. There's no reason that we wouldn't see success again in 2016 if we get back to that formula.
100% agree.
Yeah. But I did also want to point out, I do like you said, the Hicks-Johnson kind of balancing game going on, where Hicks kind of wears them down and then Johnson comes in and is the closer. And it reminds me a lot, and I want to preface this by saying I'm not really comparing these guys to the other two names that I'm about to say, but it they've shown me hints of being this. You remember Thunder and Lightning for USC? You had Reggie Bush.
Oh, yeah, Reggie.
You had Lendell White.
Yeah.
You had Lendell White. And, you know, Hicks is not Reggie Bush. He's bigger. He's not quite as fast. He's catching passes out of the backfield like Bush did. Yes, nobody bought his mom a house, as far as we know. So, you know, there's that. And then Travorce Johnson is just rolling over people. He is ruining people's reputations with the way that he is running into these guys in the linebacking core and secondary for opposing teams. And so if you really have a dual threat like that in the backfield, that is just so incredible for your offense moving forward. And so it's fun. It reminded me of those two guys. Obviously, they were an elite running back duo, something that is very rarely ever seen. But the fact that TCU has something that imitates that in a way is really, it's a good problem to have.
Well, yeah. Well, and I think, you know, there's an argument to be made that Kyle Hicks is better in the passing game than Reggie Bush was at this point in his career. He's not Reggie Bush. Like, I'm not even trying, like you said, we're not even trying to compare that. Reggie Bush was such a special, special talent. But Kyle Hicks shows enough of that to where, you know, if he's 85% of Reggie Bush, then I think special things happen. And I don't see any reason why Travorce Johnson, as long as he stays out of Gary Patterson's doghouse, which we all know is a day-to-day, maybe even a minute-to-minute proposition, he can't have that same kind of impact on the game that Lendale White had, because they actually remind me a lot of each other. And I don't see that much of a difference other than just the sheer amount of touches that Lendale White got compared to what we've seen Travorce Johnson get over the years.
Yeah. Absolutely. I agree. So, I feel like we've thoroughly covered the SMU game. I mean, all in all.
Yeah, we can forget
all,
about them TCU, for a year, right?
TCU beat them by 30, which is more than Baylor beat them by.
All right.
And Baylor let them score a touchdown. So,
all right.
Scoreboard, I guess.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, there are a couple other things that have happened around the country that we need to touch on. But right before we get to that, I did want to talk a little bit about what happened around the rest of the Big 12 on Saturday, because, you know, the Big 12 has had a really crappy start to the year. And I feel like they started to redeem themselves just slightly with the way that they played this weekend, especially West Virginia, because they went to Maryland and they played a BYU team that, yes, they're 1-2. And I know I dogged on them a lot on Thursday during Thursday's show, but they showed me a lot. This BYU team did. And West Virginia came out. They took a big lead. They fought through BYU trying to make a comeback. And then they closed out. And all three of those things, getting out early, starting off hot, you know, kind of just surviving when the other team makes their best push, and then closing out games. Those are the markers of a team that is ready to kind of reach that next level and be successful. Like, I'm talking conference title, major bowl kind of success. And I feel like this game for me showed that West Virginia is, if they're not there, they're very close to being there because of the way that they played and because of the way that they held on. They came away with that pick very late in the red zone that really kind of locked down this win over BYU. I was very impressed by West Virginia on Saturday. And I hope that other people saw this game and were as impressed as I was, because I feel like West Virginia deserves it. And I feel like it kind of gives a little bit of credit back to the Big 12, who really struggled a lot for the first 3 weeks of the season.
Well, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but nobody else is paying attention. Nobody else agrees with you, because West Virginia still remains outside of the top 25, which I think is just an absolute injustice.
I didn't realize that. I haven't been paying attention today.
They are in the receiving votes category, but they are unranked, despite the fact they beat a Pitt team that, you know, lost a heartbreaker here on Saturday. But I think that Pitt team is legit. It is pretty darn good. They're going to give some trouble in the ACC for sure to some teams. I mean, they have
talent. They didn't beat Pitt. They beat Mizzou.
Oklahoma State beat Pitt. You're right.
West Virginia beat Missouri.
They beat Mizzou, and Mizzou is kind of trash. But that's still an SEC
Missouri
team. We all know
79
that.
Points on Delaware State, by the way.
That's true.
So they were leading the halftime 56-0. Like,
yeah,
I'm pray for Delaware State. Just pray for Delaware State.
Good Lord. Yeah, so, you know, they've got that win over, you know, it's not a great Missouri team, but it's still a Power 5 skin. And, you know, they also have the win over BYU now, which, even though BYU is not a Power 5 team, they're you know, right on the verge of it, obviously. And so, you know, not giving credit to that West Virginia team for those two wins, which I think are probably the two best wins in the conference so far. A little bit just silly, in my opinion. But you know what's interesting to me is you mentioned that the Big 12 finally had a pretty decent weekend. Well, you know what the one thing that happened this weekend that hasn't happened all season?
And Iowa State got a win.
Well, there's that, but there's also the fact that who are the two teams that didn't play this weekend?
Oh, that would be Texas and Oklahoma.
Yeah, so maybe we know the old albatross of those two big-name teams not holding us back this weekend. But I will say, and I kind of wrote a little bit about this when I put the piece up about TCU getting back in the AP, the biggest, like, just troll move that Oklahoma could pull was to make sure that they come to Fort Worth unranked, because it really puts TCU in a no-win situation. If you win, well, you were the higher-ranked team. You're supposed to win
Oklahoma's
at home.
Oklahoma's having a
if
down
you
year.
Lose,
Yeah.
If you lose, well, all of a sudden it's Terrence Williams just fumbled again. God, guy. If you lose, then it's you lost to an unranked Oklahoma team. Like, it's not going to be Oklahoma's back. It's going to be, TCU is overrated. So that's just such – I mean, I feel like Bob Stoops probably did that on purpose. You know, like, he's like, I'm going to schedule two games we're probably going to lose early to make sure I go into Fort Worth unranked just to see if I can kick off TCU and Gary Patterson. Mission accomplished, Bob. Mission accomplished. I'm ticked.
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks for nothing, as usual.
Yeah,
well, that Texas
right.
remained ranked, though. So Texas managed to stay in the top 25 without playing, which might be their best way so far this year. So.
Well, yeah, that's because the team that beat them, Cal, played so well against Arizona State this week. Oh.
Wow. Oh, but hey, they beat Notre Dame. Oh.
I saw a very funny tweet. Texas beat Notre Dame, then lost to Cal. Michigan State beat Notre Dame, then got thumped by Wisconsin. And Duke beat Notre Dame, but lost to Northwestern already this year. So
This is, I mean, I don't remember a year like this in college football in at least the last decade. It has just been.
You know what it means? That tweet? It just means that Notre Dame is really bad. That's all it means. It just means that Notre Dame is bad. We don't have to read much into it. It just means that mediocre teams beat Notre Dame and then lost to other mediocre teams.
And that's not saying that Texas might not still be good. That's possible. I do think Shane Beauchel is pretty talented. That offense is pretty good. But their defense is atrocious. I mean, when we play Texas, if both teams kind of stay on the same track here where they are, let's assume TCU is obviously their defense is getting better. But can you imagine what that game is going to be like in Austin as it's currently constructed? I think it's going to be a barn burner. It's going to look like Baylor and Oklahoma State playing or something. I was trying to give you a good segue there. Yeah, there you go.
Baylor and Oklahoma State. The bad guys won 35-24 on Saturday night. Oklahoma State didn't look great in this game. I was watching it on my phone. True confessions. I was watching it on my phone while I was at the Arkansas-Texas A&M game. And, once that game got out of hand, because I don't want to get too worked up about it, but Arkansas had the ball inside the five. Four times and came away with 10 total points. And A&M's defense isn't that good. That's all I'm going to say.
No. Yeah. Miles Garrett, though. 100% props to Miles Garrett. He's the truth. Love that kid.
Dude, he is a beast. Deshaun Hall is awesome. They were up Austin Allen behind all night long because that massive offensive line just didn't have the lateral quickness to keep up with them. But they definitely shouldn't have been beaten by that much. And at halftime, they should have been up 28-10 instead of tied 17-all. So, but that's the way football goes. So, anyways, back to Oklahoma State Baylor, though. Oklahoma State didn't do much offensively in this game to really impress me from what I saw. And it was kind of frustrating after they had big offensive games against Pitt. They had a decent offensive game against Central Michigan. But, it sucks, but I think that Baylor is still good. I think that they're still good. I don't think they're going to be 10th in Hawks rankings this week.
Yeah, so. I mean, I don't know how good I think they are. I don't want to do the, Oklahoma State isn't very good thing because I don't want to take credit away from them. I do have a bias. It's really, really hard to watch Ishmael Zamora touchdowns and hear the crowd going wild for him. That's his name, right? I don't even pay attention to him. That's really hard for me. And so it's really hard for me to say, oh man, this is a really good receiver, because I don't look past, it's hard for me to look past the fact, wow, this is a guy who did a really, really horrible thing and, got
to beat a puppy. You don't have to dance around it.
He beat a puppy. Yeah. And sat for three completely inconsequential games. So I don't know what Gary Patterson would do in that situation. I don't know if you saw, but was it Missouri State? I can't remember which school it was. They had the similar situation where their quarterback did the same thing, and I don't think he's a starter, so I don't know how they're going to handle that. I would just like to think that if that happened, God forbid, a TCU player did something similar, it would be more than missing three inconsequential games against three completely overmatched opponents, and there would be a real punishment there. I like to think that would happen.
I do too.
But watching that game, I didn't watch the second half of any football game Saturday night. I got too sad. But what I'd like to, I used to believe in football gods and karma, and I'm starting to think that they're either not watching or they don't exist. Because I do think you're right. Like, I think that guy is probably gonna have a great season, and he's probably gonna catch a ton of touchdowns, and he's going to get the adoration of the crowd every single Saturday. And it just kind of makes me sick, if I'm being really, really honest. And I'm willing to try to focus on what's happening on the field for Baylor. I get that. I get why people are asking us to do that. While the assistant coaches are there, it's a little bit tougher to do, but there are a lot of really, really good kids on that program. There's a lot of really great kids at that school. There's some really incredible teachers and professors, and so I don't want to just kind of wash over the entirety of that campus. But at the same time, man, it just really kind of puts you at a loss for words.
Yeah, at some point we will be rendered speechless. At some point.
So I do think, you know, I think the biggest key, if we want to get back to football on that, the biggest key for Baylor is just going to be, can they stay healthy? Because their front line isn't bad, you know, on both sides of the ball. Their defense, you know, did some really nice things. I do stand by the fact something is wrong with Mason Rudolph. That is not the same kid we saw last year. So I do think there's something else going on that we don't know about, or maybe the offensive line just isn't good. But he does not look confident in the pocket. Completely different player than we saw, especially against TCU a year ago. At the same time, you know, Baylor took advantage of their opportunities. Yeah. Oh, he's ridiculous. And it, look, Remy Childs is a pretty good running back. So, I mean, they have some pieces there. You know, credit to the Baylor defense that stepped up and made plays when they had to. But you know, the Bears just, they cannot afford any injuries. They are going to get in trouble if their depth is tested at all, because they just don't have any left. So. I'm not by any stretch of the imagination wishing ill on any Baylor football players. I do hope that they all stay healthy, and I don't want them to have injuries. But if you are a fan of that team, I think that's got to be your number one concern, is if, you know, you start losing guys, you know, throughout the season, and TCU fans have lived that more than most. I just don't know what's going to happen. So they stay healthy, they're 100% a threat for a Big 12 championship. But if they get bit by the injury bug, they could be in a lot of trouble. It could be a very, very long year.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, the other big thing I think on Saturday for the Big 12 is, or a couple, you know, Kansas State shut out Missouri State 35-0, which means they did exactly what they needed to do against a team like Missouri State. It's never easy to shut someone out. Mm-mm. So the shutout is impressive. Iowa State absolutely obliterated San Jose State, which was nice to see. Makes me feel a little bit better about their offense. They hung 44 on Iowa State, or on San Jose State. Which I believe you were trying to rep San Jose State on Thursday night.
Yeah, you know, I thought my Northern California, you know, my fellow Northern Californians would do a little bit better there. But, they looked real bad. And, you know, good for Iowa State. They really needed that win. I thought they would win. I thought they'd win, you know, somewhat comfortably. But I thought San Jose State would show up. But I guess playing an A's is a little bit tougher.
Yeah, well, no, Iowa State won to the tune of 503 yards of total offense and four interceptions of, what is his name, Josh Love, San Jose State's quarterback. So it was a good, we were talking about taking care of business and doing what you need to do against lesser opponents. Yeah, Iowa State did that, and that's, you know, credit to them. That's
can we mention something else about Iowa State, though, that I want to give less credit to them for? I don't know if you saw the quote from Cotton Moya, their superstar safety, who is a California native as well, but he's from Bakersfield, so that barely counts. I don't know if you saw what he had to say about the TCU fans at the end of the second half of the Iowa State game. So he basically called out the fans for saying, well, I don't know about those TCU fans, but I know in Ames that stadium would have been packed. There was basically nobody there at the end of that game, not taking into a fact that, you know, he'd kind of gotten his tail kicked for four quarters there by those TCU team, and that it was a bazillion degrees in the stadium. And we've already discussed that in length. And so it just kind of took a little bit of a cheap shot there at TCU fans, saying that, you know, it was a lot different in Ames and the fans gave a lot more support, and he couldn't believe that people actually left during that game. So I was a little unhappy about that situation. I really like him kind of talking after you got beat down by, what was it, 3 touchdowns, coming after the fans on a day like that when it was 11 a.m. start. That to me was kind of a little sour grape on your way out of town. I'm trying to find the actual quote.
That's a bummer to hear something like that from a kid. I'm more inclined to take it from a kid, though, just because they're emotional. You know, they just finished a tough game. It was hot out there. He's probably worn out. He's probably frustrated with the way that they played. And he said what was on his mind. And he wanted to just take a shot at the team that just beat them. So, like, I'm not terribly upset about it.
This was several days later, though. This was well after the fact, I believe. I'm trying to see if I can find the exact quote.
Okay. Well, I mean, even then, like, it bothers me. Don't get me wrong. It's frustrating.
Sure.
And, you know, I don't know that Ames has ever seen an 11 a.m. kickoff that, you know, had 95 degree weather and it was like 100 and something on the field. So I don't know how much, you know, actual room he has to talk because I don't know how Ames fans would react in that situation. I do know that Iowa State fans are awesome. I know that because I've watched a bunch of their home games, and even though that team is total trash, hot garbage, burning dumpster, they're still showing out. So good on them. Props to them. Bummer that the kid said it, you know, but whatever. He's a kid.
Well, and there's also not much else to do in Ames. So there's that too.
Yeah. Now,
I mean, they
sell
out high school girls basketball games because that's just what they do, which is great.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that's like a good thing. But I just find it, yeah. I was like, come on, man. I wanted to give him a big old come on, man, for that one.
Yeah. If we want to talk about quotes that do bug me, though, we can talk about what Brian Kelly had to say after Notre Dame's loss to Duke on Saturday.
Oh,
did you see what he had to say?
You know what? Fill me in because I don't know if I saw this.
Let me make sure I get this right, so I'm going to search it real quick. But he said something along the lines that this loss to Duke had nothing to do with coaching.
Interesting.
And then he fired defensive coordinator Brian Van Gorder.
Hmm.
Who, fun story, and my friends will back this up. I had a couple buddies over because we were watching the end of the Notre Dame Duke game before we headed to the stadium in Arlington to watch Arkansas A&M. And they showed a picture of Brian Van Gorder. He always has that big green Irish hat on the sidelines, and he's got his guys huddled around him. And I pointed at him and I said, that's the guy that just gave up 38 points to Duke. That's the guy that's getting fired this week. So I called it, first of all. I called it to the people that were sitting in my living room. Second of all, kind of a trash move by Brian Kelly to say that it wasn't a coaching problem that cost them the loss, and then you go and you fire a coach.
Kiss of death.
Yeah. It's pretty trash.
Well,
I mean,
it is
Brian
Kelly.
If you're Notre Dame and you're going to lose to Duke for the first time since 1961, have a little bit of grace on the way down. Just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
I mean, Duke had scored 27 total points in their two previous games, which were both losses to Wake Forest and Northwestern. They scored 3 points against Wake Forest. They hung 38 on Notre Dame.
Yeah.
At Notre Dame.
Yeah. I do. I want to come back, and I'm sorry to come back to this, but I want to read you this quote from Cotton Moya and just see if you feel the same way after you hear it. We really try to have a lot of pride putting these jerseys on, putting Iowa State jerseys on, because it's more than us. It's not really just us. People wore these jerseys before us. People played here before us. We have a lot of fans. Like someone said, we went down to TCU. They've been winning, and they had no one in the stands. We have so many people in the stands, no matter what the outcome is of every game.
Well.
But I'd be a little bit harsher than, you know, initially. It was one game, 11 a.m.
I'm going to assume that he's not a communications major.
Yeah. Well, and I'm going to assume, too, that he doesn't watch other TC football games because he has more responsibilities with his own football team to see that. I would say our fans have been pretty awesome, and our student section has been unbelievable the last couple of years, especially what the Riff Ram crew down there has done has been great. I think it's been a much different environment, and I have a feeling we'll see a better representation of TC fandom on Saturday afternoon at 4 o'clock against Oklahoma than what we saw 2 weeks ago against Iowa State.
Yeah. I totally agree. I mean, he's going to be done with his game, I think, on Saturday at that point, so he can go ahead and tune into Fox 4 p.m. Central Time.
I mean,
see that blackout in all of its glory. Because that's one thing the TCU fans do very well, and we can talk about some of the struggles that you've had with requesting people to wear certain colors. I feel like this is a good segue into that, because TCU fans aren't great at doing, like, the white out, purple out blocking scheme stuff. But TCU fans are really good at the blackout. They all wear black. It looks great. It looked phenomenal against Kansas State 2 years ago. It looked really good last year. And I have no doubt that even though it's a 4 p.m. kick, it's going to look really great against Oklahoma, because that stadium is definitely going to be packed. And there's my definitely for this pod.
There you go. Drink. It is so unfortunate and that's another way that I feel like Bob Stoops sabotaged us. The blackout against Kansas State, the blackout even against West Virginia on a Thursday night last year, it does. Mm-hmm. It looks great under the lights, but a blackout at 4 o'clock is going to be interesting. It does take a little bit of the impact. So Oklahoma kind of screwed the pooch there by being, you know, fairly average here. And I'm not going to say that they aren't good, but I do think that they're going to come in ready to play, and it's going to be a really, really tough game for TCU to win. I'll probably take the Frogs at home in this scenario, but I don't think some people are getting a little cocky here on TCU's side, thinking that we're going to walk all over them because they have two losses. This is not a trash Oklahoma team. It's still a pretty good team, still a pretty talented team. It's going to come down in the fourth quarter, in my opinion. But all that to say, yeah, having to play at 4 o'clock in the blackout's tough. It looks like the weather won't be terrible, which is nice, and that should help alleviate things. We know guys and gals and friends of the program and enemies of the program, we know that because we are wearing black does not mean that the players will be wearing black, because we know that we generally, you know, have to, we generally don't do that. So don't be expecting the players. They might, but it's not a guarantee. So please don't tweet at Crystal Compey about how you'd like them to do that. But, you know, but the whole color blocking thing to me has become such an issue of contention among TCU fans. And I actually saw somebody on a Facebook group write a post about how they were watching the Tennessee game, and it was so impressive, you know, at Neyland with the color blocking and the way that it worked. And it was. I mean, it looked unbelievable if you watched that game. I mean, it was obviously super impactful. And they're like, oh, why can't we do that? Why can't we just listen and follow instructions? But the thing I think that gets lost here is, A, we have 50,000 people. Of those 50,000 people, only approximately 8,000 of them are students. And of those 8,000, I don't know what the student section, but I'm going to guess it's far less than that. It's probably in the 5,000 to 6,000 range would be my estimation here. Our entire living alumni base wouldn't fill Neyland Stadium or the Horseshoe or the Big House. We don't have 100,000 living alumni. And so what I think people are losing out on when they complain about the fact that people come in wearing not what was on their ticket is TCU can't survive if it's just TCU's team. We don't have the people to do that. What we are now and what we've, you know, worked so hard to become is Fort Worth's team. And Fort Worth, the city, has adopted TCU. And there are a ton of people in that city that when their team isn't playing, they are rooting hard for TCU. I can't tell you how many people I know that went to Oklahoma or went to Texas Tech or went to Texas or went anywhere else and have become TCU fans because they live in Fort Worth. And before TCU joined the Big 12, there was no real rivalry there, so they were free to do that. And they've remained, you know, diehard TCU fans except for one game a year. So a lot of those people, you know, maybe they don't have a white shirt or they don't have a black shirt or they don't want to go out and buy one or they didn't go to TCU and so, you know, they want to wear what they want to wear. It would be great if we all followed the instructions. But at the same time, I'm never going to get mad at somebody who decides to spend their money on tickets, shows up to the stadium, sits in the stands and cheers for TCU, no matter what color they're wearing. I get why we're trying to do it. I support that we're making it a thing. It's not about us. It isn't. It's about the marketing. It's about the merchandise and it's about the recruits. So yeah, it would be really, really cool to do, but trying to compare us to what happens at Tennessee or Ohio State or Michigan, or I think it was Virginia Tech that did one of the most impressive, what do they call it when they hold up the signs? There's like a specific name for that.
Like a card, like a card thing.
Yeah, they have some, it's got some fancy name with multiple syllables. I can't think of, but you know,
carding.
We're not, exactly, that was definitely not it, but I'll go with it. But you know, that it's we're probably not there. We might be able to get there, but we're not there now. But I think the fact that we like bemoan people that come in and wear purple on a white day is just a little bit ridiculous. Let's just be glad that people want to come to the games, because you and I both have been at TCU at times where, you know, we weren't quite as successful as we are, and we didn't have quite the following, you know, locally that we do now, and especially not nationally. So the fact that people care enough and want to come, despite the fact that maybe it's not their team, is more than enough for me at this point in TCU's football life.
Absolutely. Ultimately, if they're a paying customer, they're coming to the game and they're going to sit in the stands for an Iowa State game that's hot. Wear whatever the hell you want. I don't care.
I will be wearing black on Saturday, though. I'm 100% behind that. And I wore purple last week. I don't like the white out. Sorry, I just don't. I don't wear a white T-shirt. Just a thing. Maybe I'll get some light gray ones next year.
Just going to live into that blackout mentality in as many ways as possible, I think.
100%.
So, but, you know, you did make a good point because you said don't tweet about it to Crystal Conte. And that brings us to everybody's new favorite segment of the show, #ComplaintsDelConte.
Woo!
We need like a some sort of musical theme or something.
Need a music
we'll figure
bed,
that
for
out.
Sure. Yeah.
Anyone that's listening, either to us live or to the pod when it posts tomorrow, if you have gifts in that area and you want to create a hashtag Chris Del Conte jingle that we can play when we intro this segment, be more than happy to you know, field those interests.
I don't know that we need a jingle more than maybe just like the sound of a baby crying. That could also be effective.
That would also be good. There's probably something there out there on the free internet archive or something. So, okay. So, Melissa, I have a question for you. When you are confused about the start time for a TCU game, what is your first step of action? What's the first thing you do?
Oh, no. I mean, because I'm, you know, so many ways I want to answer this. I Google it, Jamie. That's what I do. I Google it.
You Google it, maybe check ESPN?
Yeah. Or go to GoFrogs.com, which is, or maybe use the FTW app that TCU produces, or the GoFrogs app, also an effective means of communication with all things TCU. So I usually go to the internet.
Maybe text a buddy.
Oh, that's, you know what? I've done that before. Yeah.
During the Baylor-Oklahoma State game on Saturday night, there was a ticker that ran across the bottom of the screen, and it said that TCU-Oklahoma game coverage starts at 7:30 p.m. Eastern /4:30 p.m. Pacific time.
That's incorrect.
Obviously a typo. The game time has not changed. It's still at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturday, October 1st. Would you tweet this to @_Del Conte? Has kickoff for OU changed? TV on the Baylor/OSU game is saying coverage starts at 7:30 Eastern time. Or would you say, is the TCU-OU game next week at 4 or 6:30? Read the scroll below, @FoxSports, @_Del Conte, with a screen cap of the ticker that ran across the bottom.
You know, I love the Twitter machine. I do. I think it's great. I think it's been a great invention. But one of my biggest pet peeves is Twitter, is when people tweet things like, what time is that game? Is that time correct? Or what's the score of something? Because my thought is, and maybe I'm crazy, if I can tweet it, I can Google it. So why would I tweet it when I can just Google it and get instantaneous feedback? Mm-hmm. Like, I get that, you know, like, there's a part of me that goes, okay, I can understand, it's confusing, but there's also a larger part of me that says, well, if everything that we know about this game has said very often and consistently that's at 4 o'clock, just because one organization says it's at, you know, 6:30, doesn't make me all of a sudden believe everything else has changed. I tend to believe the majority and then find the answer for myself. I don't know that I would deem that Chris Del Conte worthy. Not the worst one we've heard. But I think there are a lot better ways to get that answer.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to get through a series of steps. It's like the person who tweeted out the question about the decal that we talked about last week.
They've done their work.
It was obvious they had done the legwork. I don't feel like these people had done the legwork that would warrant them reaching out to Del Conte directly about that. Another thing, here we go, because we all know that Chris Del Conte is he's got a direct line from the coaching staff when it comes to recruiting.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Obviously.
When it comes to recruiting. So, @_Del Conte, are we looking at any Aussie punters? Can we send Nathan Chapman some TCU swag? Naming recruits in Australia who we would like to send them some swag.
Let's also remind everyone that that is a significant violation and will get TCU in all kinds of trouble. You cannot send eligible high school athletes swag without going through the proper channels, especially if you're the athletic director of said university that is interested. I'm all for people publicizing. Get you a bag man. I'm all for publicizing, under-recruited kids. I like that. That's great. I don't know that, again, going to the athletic director is going to help you in that situation, or that you should even tweet about specific recruits to the athletic director, because that, I'm assuming, is some type of recruiting violation. So let's not try to get TCU in trouble with pointless tweets.
I will say this. There is one person on here who yesterday tweeted at Del Conte after Del Conte answered a question, saying, thanks, answering stupid questions like this one is the reason we TCU fans love you so much. So at least someone was self-aware enough.
You can admit you're stupid. Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
self-aware
that's
enough
okay
to say, I probably should have done some legwork before this, but hey, thank you for being awesome. Like, that's good. Props to that.
Well, and again, he, you know, because he's so good and because he answers so many stupid questions that I think we've come to take it for granted that he will answer ours. So we continue to send him less than exceptional questions through the Twitter.
Yes. And I will say this because it just happened. We'll get back to the hashtag complaints Del Conte in a second. TCU soccer moved to 8-1-1 on the season with a golden goal from Allison Ganter. The Frogs beat SMU on Sunday night, which is tonight, but for those of you listening on another day, Sunday night, in two overtimes. So TCU now 8-1-1 on the season. Go Frogs. Go Soccer Frogs. Go Soccer
they are
Frogs. I like that.
Unbelievable. I like that. Soccer Frogs. They, you know, that's
Soccer Frogs.
We need to make a point at Frog War to do a better job covering our quote-unquote non-revenue sports, because soccer and volleyball are doing this year. They certainly deserve a lot more love. Yeah,
they're
unbelievable.
Yeah.
So it's awesome to have, you know, obviously we all get excited about football and baseball and everybody's super pumped for basketball season, but don't forget about your other fall sports. So what they've done to start the season is pretty special. And they've got, you know, both of them have a legit shot to compete for Big 12 championships. So that's exciting.
Yeah. You know, here's a fun fact, Melissa. If you're a TCU fan and you're deterred from buying season tickets to like baseball or soccer or football because they're hot and it's outside, you know, TCU volleyball actually plays indoors.
Interesting.
So that might be a good opportunity to stay cool and watch TCU athletics dominate some folks. How about that?
Yes, 100%. And a lot of times you can get like a little 2-for-1 deal where, you know, soccer and volleyball play on the same night, or a lot of times there's a volleyball game in the morning and a football game in the afternoon. Get there early, parking is easier. You can get a little tailgating in, catch a little volleyball action, head back out to the tailgate, head into the TCU football game, and just kind of make a whole day of it. And like we said, you know, last week too, both soccer and volleyball, awesome, awesome venues if you have kids. So if you're looking
for a
cheap entertainment night for you and the family, much, much less expensive than going to a TCU football game. Not that we don't want you to come to those as well, obviously, but you could certainly work both of them into the schedule. And with women's basketball coming up too, I mean, I know we're all going to be packing Daniel Meyer for Jamie Dixon, but I think it's we'd be remiss not to mention TCU basketball has got a pretty special season ahead too, with a gold medalist that they signed this past spring coming in for TCU basketball in Amber Rodriguez. So yeah, lots of a lot of other sports to get excited about. It is as always a great time to be a Horned Frog.
Absolutely. Absolutely it is. Get your season tickets any way you can get them. Get those Frog points.
Absolutely.
Get them going. Here's the last hashtag complaints Del Conte for the night, though. Okay? Hey, at TCU football @_Del Conte. Del Conte. ... Any highlights from the SMU game last night? !! #ponydown.
That comes back to, you know, that if you can tweet it, you can Google it. And also, we have an excellent social media team that posts on Twitter, Instagram, and GoFrogs.com highlights after every single game. And they do it in so many different ways that are so visually appealing.
And they do so much in-game stuff, too. Like, if you guys are on Twitter during a game and you're following the TCU football account, just keep your eyes open or just go to that account and like bookmark it and put it in a list and just follow that list, because they are so incredible about getting scoring plays and turnovers and other big plays clipped, posted like within minutes of the play actually happening. They're phenomenal. They're one of the better accounts across college landscape for getting that kind of stuff done, which makes our job really easy if we ever want to fan shot something and post it on the site, because it's right there. But yeah,
yeah, and, like, TCU, and if you're not,
if you're following TCU football and you have the ability to tweet at them and ask them for highlights, just click on their account and scroll down, or click their videos tab and scroll down, because you're going to see it like almost immediately.
Well, and you know, and that brings up the point too. If you're not following at TCU FTW, you're also really missing out too, because the stuff that they're doing with social media is it's unbelievable. They do some of the best marketing stuff in the country. I mean, their schedule poster was rated the best schedule poster in the country this year. Their graphic design, their video stuff is just, it's top notch. And so, shameless plug for TCU for the win, or FTW or Fort Worth. I can never decide if it's For the Win or Fort Worth, but it works both ways, which is kind of cool and clever.
Oh, is it Fort Worth?
I don't know. I think it might be for both. Yeah, I think it might.
That's
it might
question
work for both.
That we need answered. If you know the
answer
to that question,
what
does TCU FTW stand for? Tweet at Frogs of War, and we'll get you an RT and some followers.
Kate and Hyde, we're talking to you if you're listening. If not, we'll make sure we get in touch with him. Yeah, he'd be the one to answer
help.
That question. Yeah,
help us, Kate and Hyde. You're our only hope.
You're our only hope. So yeah, he's great at what he does. He's kind of the main guy behind it. So,
right on.
Yeah. So yeah, again, guys, if you can Google it, do that. If your Googling doesn't work, then you can reach out to a myriad of other sources. And then if none of those sources come together for you, then and only then should you tweet at Chris Belmonte.
Yeah.
Or if you have a funny pun to tell him. I feel like he'd like puns.
I feel like he is a guy that would like puns. He's the kind of guy who likes puns in that way where he like gives it a half chuckle, shakes his head, and he's like, man, those are ridiculous, but I love them. And then he takes a sip
of whiskey
in his $4,000 suit. You know.
Yeah.
So,
he's pretty – definitely going to tell him a pun next time I see him.
Yes, absolutely. So, we would be remiss, though, if we got all the way through our Sunday night show and didn't talk about one of the latest rumors regarding Gary Patterson. So let's hit this quick, and then I do have a news note that I wanted to hit, because there were two pretty big deaths today across the sporting landscape that I feel like we need to at least give a nod to. So, Gary Patterson – obviously a big name coach when other coaching positions open up. For those of you that might not remember from the beginning of our show when we mentioned it, I think we mentioned it while we were on the air. Maybe we were talking about it before. Les Miles got fired from LSU on Sunday, along with offensive coordinator Cam Cameron, which means that there's a head coaching position that is open in the college landscape, Power 5. Oh, as Ezekiel Elliott just hurdles someone. That was beautiful.
Yeah, he did.
Cowboys.
You're a little behind here, but it's pretty
I'm
nice.
I'm screaming it on an iPad because I'm in my studio, Melissa, also known as the third bedroom.
Studio, yeah.
Whatever. That was a beautiful hurdle, and I don't even care that I'm behind because it's new to me now. So Les Miles got fired from LSU on Sunday, which means that there's a coaching position open, which means that Gary Patterson is going to be a name that people throw out because – regardless of all of the progress the TCU has made, moving from Conference USA to the Mountain West to the Big East for a half second, then the Big 12, everyone's going to look at the TCU coach and see that success and say, hey, he would want to come here because we're a bigger and better program with more money, and we're awesome because we're us and they're TCU. Y'all, Gary Patterson is not going to coach at LSU. He's not going to do it. Because they still have their defensive coordinator. They are still LSU and not TCU. And here's the thing. Here's a list of schools, Melissa, and you tell me if this is true. Here's a list of schools that Gary Patterson has turned down or interviewed for and then declined to go further in the process when it comes to interviewing for their head coaching position. You ready?
Ready.
Kansas State.
Hmm.
Yes. Arkansas.
Hmm.
Okay. There's a rumor that before they hired Charlie Strong, Texas reached out to Gary Patterson.
Mm-hmm.
There's a rumor that before Texas A&M hired Kevin Sumlin, they reached out to Gary Patterson. There's a rumor that before they hired Brian Kelly, Notre Dame reached out to Gary Patterson. There's a rumor that before they hired Urban Meyer, Ohio State reached out to Gary Patterson. There's a rumor that before Florida hired Jim McElwain, they reached out to Gary Patterson. Y'all, he turned down all those jobs. He's not taking LSU's job. Just shut the rumor down. It's a ridiculous thing. Yeah, if they throw $7 million at him a year, would he consider it? Probably. Because he would be ridiculous not to consider it. Is he going to get $7 million thrown a year thrown at him from LSU? Probably not, because we know the financial state of Louisiana right now. And it's just not going to happen. He's not going to be the head coach at LSU. The rumor is ridiculous. That's my take. Melissa, what's yours?
Well, and you know, I think you bring up a good point. If LSU were to throw $7 million at Gary Patterson, I don't think for one second that TCU wouldn't throw $7 million at Gary Patterson. There's
that's
too much
totally
at stake. Yeah, there's just, and that's the thing that it always upsets me, and that we're always going to be the little sisters of the poor and the national eye in this regard. Anything that LSU can pay Gary Patterson, TCU can pay Gary Patterson. TCU is in a much better situation financially than LSU, as just the whole, as a private institution, as a place in Texas with the donors that we have, with the people that built that stadium. There is far too much at risk for TCU to get outbid on Gary Patterson. That won't happen. If he decides to leave, it will be for some reason that we're unaware of. And at this point, to me, once they built the statue, once they gave him that extra year on his contract, that was basically them saying, hey, we're in this forever. You can't leave, and we won't ask you to leave. Because you can't, you can't backtrack without looking like a total fool. So do I think that Gary Patterson picks up the phone if LSU calls? Yeah. And then I also think Gary Patterson subsequently gets a nice little raise from TCU again, because you should use leverage if you have it. But if you really think he's going to go to bat, if you really think Kelsey Patterson is going to go to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, you have not met Kelsey Patterson. That woman
that is,
loves Fort Worth. She just built her dream house. I won't be ignorant enough to say it's never, ever going to happen, but I will be very confident in saying the chances of it happening are incredibly slim. The only job in the country that scares me, in a way it did very differently than when it opened up the last time, is Kansas State, because there is something to going home again. But again, can you really see Kelsey in Manhattan, Kansas? I just don't know that I can. You know, that's
Columbus, Ohio.
I don't see him going to Ohio State. I don't see him going to Texas. I don't see him going to Texas A&M. I don't think those are the things he wants to deal with. Gary wants to coach football. Yeah, like he's just, that's just not. And I, you know, I got into it with Chuck Cooperstein a little bit on Twitter today, because he said something and I kind of responded back, and he was like, oh, you know, the Gary Patterson I know will coach forever. And I have heard everything but that. He is not, like we've talked about this before, he's not a guy that's going to die on the sidelines. He has a ton of interests. He's into photography. He's into music. He loves to travel. Like, he wants to, everything I've heard from people that know him, which could be completely untrue, is that he has a life to live once coaching is done. And while he will miss it, and while he does love it, I don't think it's his only passion. It's his biggest passion, but I don't think it's the only thing that drives him. It's the only thing that wakes him up in the mornings. And I just don't see Gary sticking, you know, and I don't see him doing this for another 20 years. If he does, I hope he does it at TCU, and I would welcome it. But I don't see him being Bill Snyder. You know, I think there's more to Gary Patterson than the guy we see on the Saturday afternoons. And he is 100% committed to his program and to TCU. And that's the other thing, too. I don't see him leaving with that pyramid unfilled unless he retires. Like, I don't think he leaves TCU until he marks off that top box. And for those of you guys that don't know what I'm talking about, there's always a pyramid of excellence kind of modeled off after John Wooden's hanging in the TCU locker room. And the top of that pyramid is Dak Prescott finally has a passing touchdown. Sorry, Jamie, spoiler alert.
Come on.
don't
tell me who it's to.
Now Dak Prescott and Trayvon Boykin have the same amount of passing touchdowns this season. So, you know, that's just my thing is will he ever leave? Maybe. You can't rule it out. This is not the time for him to do it. TCU's in a good spot. The Big 12 is a very winnable conference, and it's still very possible for a one-loss Big 12 team to make the playoffs, especially with what we all believe that the playoffs is going to expand here in the next couple of years. But going to the SEC West while Nick Saban is still a living, breathing robot on the sidelines to Alabama doesn't make a lot of sense. When your biggest threats in the Big 12 right now are Oklahoma, Texas, and one other team, you know, every other year that ends up being pretty good.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's not going to happen, but he would be a fool not to at least listen.
Yeah, pick up the phone. Gary gave himself a raise. 100%.
And rightfully so. Rightfully so.
Yeah. Don't get your money, man.
Yeah. You mentioned something that I did want to get to before we talk about Jose Fernandez and Arnold Palmer. Trevon Boykin came in today for Russell Wilson. I was busy, so I didn't see how this happened. Maybe you can clarify whether it was a Russell Wilson injury or just because they were up so much. But he did throw his first touchdown pass of the season to Doug Baldwin today, and that's a big deal. When he was undrafted and everyone doubted that he would be a quarterback at this level, and now he is either in mop-up duty or due to an injury to Russell Wilson.
It was an injury.
Throwing touchdowns for the
NFL. Might not be the last time we see him. Yeah. So Russell Wilson, you know, he got banged up a couple weeks ago. You know, played on a bad ankle last week, and then took a really, really nasty hit moving out of the pocket right to the knee, and it looks like maybe an MCL sprain. They're going to do an MRI tomorrow to see if it's going to be any significant damage. Knowing Russell Wilson, he's probably going to try to play through it. But I would say that there's a pretty good shot that Trevon Boykin might have a chance to get a start next week. Looked pretty good. I think he had 60 yards, had the touchdown, may have had one real bad interception, but you know, he definitely looked like he could play at that level. And with how bad the Seattle offense had been before this point, you know, and there's nothing like playing San Francisco to kind of cure that for you. But you know, he did a nice job. He came in, moved the offense. They were way up at that time, but finished with 7 for 9 with 65 yards, one touchdown, and one interception. So a really nice day for Trevon Boykin to come in and get to play a little bit. And you know, certainly I'm sure Seahawks fans hope that Russell Wilson is back, but I don't think he gave Pete Carroll any reason to doubt that it was the right choice to leave him as QB2 on the roster.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So yeah, good for you, Trey. Really glad to see that happen, even though it is at the expense of a Russell Wilson knee. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you know, we would be remiss since we are TCU focused, but we would be very remiss, I think, with you know, an hour and a half of a sports radio show on Sunday night to not talk about the two massive sports deaths that happened today, Melissa. Mm-hmm. Jose Fernandez, and I think this gets lost because, you know, Dallas-Fort Worth is such a massive American League town. Mm-hmm. Jose Fernandez, pitcher for the Miami Marlins, he was 24 years old, just an absolutely dominant pitcher, an elite-level talent, passed away on Sunday morning at about 3 o'clock in the morning out in Miami. His boat crashed onto some rocks, and it flipped over, and he and two other passengers of the boat all passed away. Just the response, I think, from all of the other teams in the major leagues and from the major league, from Major League Baseball itself and from the Players Association and all of this stuff, you know, reflects the character of this human being. I mean, if you don't know anything about Jose Fernandez, people, you really need to go research this kid, because he was just a phenomenal human being. He defected from Cuba multiple times, being arrested each time, and then finally snuck away on a boat with a bunch of other people, including his mother, when he was 15 years old. Someone fell out of the boat on their way to Florida. And, you know, I use the word boat very loosely here. And mm-hmm. so he just, without hesitation, in the middle of the night, heard someone fall out of the boat, jumped into the water to save them. It turned out to be his mother. She grabbed onto his left arm, and he used his right arm to swim them the 60 feet back to the boat in the middle of the Gulf. He is a family man to the core. His girlfriend, maybe it's his fiance, is pregnant with their first kid. And he was just a phenomenal talent on the baseball field. So, you know, my heart breaks, in situations like that, just to see a life like his cut so short, when he could have been so, so phenomenal, for so long. But to say, you know, he lived very well in 24 years. And that's no consolation, but so just rest in peace, Jose Fernandez. You know, not much else I can say. I'm a baseball fan first, so watching him brought such great joy to me. And then Arnold Palmer passed away this evening. One of the greatest golfers of all time, so influential for the game of golf. Yeah, and so that's worth noting as well. Rest well, Arnold, pardon me. Yeah, I don't know.
We've
got
anything? Year.
We got like 30 seconds left.
2016 has been a rough year. I was a big,
yeah.
I was a big Jose Fernandez fan. Love the energy that he brought on the diamond. And my dad, who's a huge golf fan and a big time golfer, raised me knowing all the old guys, the guys that started it all. So losing Arnold Palmer, you know, is definitely a devastating blow, but you know, both of those men, despite the difference in time they had on this earth, lived well and lived life well and left a legacy that will far outlive them and probably outlive us. So rest in peace to those two men. We'll miss you for what you did as athletes, but as people even more.
Yes, I am Jamie. She is Melissa. Good night, everybody.
Whew, you flung that in. That was impressive.
I was going to plug that we were coming back on Thursday, which I think we should probably do from here on out, is at least leave time to say, you know, we'll be back Sunday night at 8:30. So make sure you're tuned in so that, you know, build it that way a little bit.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Good show. I thought it was good.
Yeah, it was a good show. We got to a lot of topics.
Mm-hmm. We're good at talking for an hour and a half, I found.
Yeah, that's really easy. Like, people don't call in. It does not hurt our show one bit.
I didn't even tweet the number out tonight.
Did you not? Yeah. Oh, yeah. I saw that. I saw it pop up on Twitter. But yeah, I mean, it would be great. It'd be awesome if we could start getting some people to call in. But if we don't, I think we still do a really good job of keeping things interesting, keeping them moving.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I just took a huge drink of water. Yeah. No,
yeah.
I totally agree.
I heard that. Oh, man.
Yeah. So. Well, let's see since we didn't have anyone on tonight, let's maybe shake the bushes a little bit and see if we can't get someone on Thursday.
Who are you thinking? For OU, we ought to be able to get, you know, what we could do is we could always get one of the Crimson and Cream guys on, start doing, you know, in addition to our Q&A.
That's what I was thinking, was someone from Crimson and Cream or someone from Football Brainiacs to come on and talk a little bit about Oklahoma. And then maybe another former TCU, if we've got time.
It'd be awesome if we get somebody that played. I wish we'd do more. If we could get somebody that played on that 2005 team, that would be really cool.
Let me check that roster because we might be able to.
Yeah.
Just see.
Yeah, I think it's like if we get a former player on. Wait, go ahead.
I was just saying maybe we could like find Ty Gunn or something.
Oh, that would be cool. That'd be awesome. I think it was Ty. I'm trying to remember. But it'd be cool like if every Thursday we did like a 15-minute segment, you know, with somebody from our, you know, opposing team, and then, you know, on Sundays did like a former player or something like that. It'd be really cool. Who's that guy that's kind of annoying most of the time? That's the newspaper writer. In Oklahoma City, the guy. Yeah, it'd be cool if we get Barry Trammell on.
Yeah, that would be good.
I don't know if we could do that, but
we can always reach out. I'm sure he'd be willing to puff himself up a little bit.
For sure, he feels like the kind of guy. I'll shoot him an email and just see what he says.
Okay.
Can't hurt. No, it's free. All right, so if you want to look over the roster from 2005 and then reach out to the Crimson and Cream guys, I'll take a look. I'll shoot an email to Barry Trammell because we can always, if we need to, we can always just schedule those guys out for 10-15 minutes, or leave one of them for Sunday night if we need to.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Cool.
All right. Well, I'll chat with you later.
Sounds good. All right. Talk to you later.
All right. Bye.
Bye.